Welcome to Great Minds, and our guest today is Heidi Therese Danglemeyer. Heidi is the founder of Girl Approved. We're going to talk about that. She's also launching something new around the concept of really creating opportunity for those who don't necessarily have it. She runs a wonderful think tank all around the future of consumerism, technology, culture. She's been at this a long time and is very passionate. So we are thrilled to have you here, Heidi, and a heartfelt welcome.
Why, thank you. So I will say I've been at this for a while, but the part that is the most important, the public does not know about. In fact, you will be one of the first people to know we're finally launching what has been almost a couple of decades of work. So,
all right. Well, we are excited to have you. And I guess Girl Approved is coming up on 20 years. So you have been at it a long time indeed. Let's talk about some of the early sort of evolution of Heidi and go back to Princeton. You have a doctorate in philosophy. You were studying artificial intelligence before anybody was talking about it. Talk about how that background in philosophy and science really helped create what is a very unique foundation.
I'm actually a physicist first. So I was working on my first robot when I actually was designing robot arms when I was like 21. So first I was a physicist and an engineer. And then I got interested in the mind, because the mind is the great frontier. And so that really shaped where I am today. And in fact, what it made me realize is that when you get accepted into these programs, there's not a lot of people at the PhD level. Maybe there's like 12 a year, and there's not a lot of girls, definitely not a lot of girls. And I think going there, I had the very distinct feeling that the way I saw problems was fundamentally different than the men. And there was things that were great at, but there was things I was really good at that they were like, how do you do that? And you're like, I don't know. They used to call me weird brain because there were certain problems that I could solve really easily. And this was natural. Now, again, I will say the guys around me had certain skills that I wasn't necessarily as good at. But what this got me very interested in is not science as it is known today, because science has been stock for many, many years. I got interested in what was next. And so if you look at the body of science and technology is what man's mind could tell us about human potential or Mother Nature, it brought us to a point, but there's a huge frontier of questions it couldn't answer. And when I was at Princeton, I started to read letters from Einstein and Tesla to girls. And they said, girls, don't follow us. That would be how we study, put the girl in STEM today, or that's a concept of inclusion. They said the girls should go off on their own and study nature independently, blank slate, and they believed they could solve problems that had stumped men in science. So I sort of got an opposite instruction than the kind of contemporary inclusive narrative. And I never got the story that I should be more like a man, or that being different would be my problem, that I innately, being a girl, could bring something that the guys needed. So I'm very fortunate that my experience of science made me more interested not in what was, but what could be. And it didn't give me the kind of poor me narrative. It gave me that concept like, hey, I am needed and I can help men do what he cannot do alone. And I cannot tell you how important it is that we switch to that concept for women. It is so fundamentally important because, and then I'm going to get into this affects marketing, because there are the most important questions we can't answer are they going to be the juiciest for marketing and innovation, which is, what does it mean to be alive? How does the mind work? And we are not a static creature. We are a creature in creation, meaning that a particle is just a particle, but we are changing our form by learning things, by creating culture, by adapting ourselves. So we have this unique property of being a self-creating creature. We're both creating and expanding what our mind could do. We're not the same man, you know, man, literally the male is not the same as a man in the cave. He's invented capabilities and he trains his mind. He is a different species. So we are species information. We are species that literally is expanding what the capabilities of the species is. And this is what the scientists, all the great quantum physicists said, we do not understand something fundamental about being alive, and you cannot explain it in material science or science that exists today, or even how we use our mind today. So I have been able to see myself as one of the sort of the pioneers of what is next, not as a victim. And so I want to say that this was really, really, really the next step for females, is not caring what man is. Man's got to do man, but figuring out what we are and what our minds can do, and recognizing that in the difference is the key to the next evolution of human possibility. So I have to say that had I not had that firsthand experience of knowing my brain could do things a little different than the guys, and stuff that was hard for them was natural to me, and then realizing that science was great, but there's a huge frontier of open questions about nature. The most exciting ones, really.
I love this. It's so fascinating and so different. Now, today in 2024, AI is all the rage. Talk about what AI meant at Princeton in 1996. That's quite some time ago.
I want to differentiate two things that are very important. There is using the mind, how we're trained from a young age, how to rationally think and solve problems. And that created modern science, a certain way of observing information and documenting it and creating the language. So that is one way to use the mind. Okay. Well, the original AI was really about what does it mean to think? Okay. So there's been a shift. So it wasn't just how do we take the body of knowledge that is known today, package it up in a major database way so that we can access it and play with it. So the original pursuit of AI, which was the fundamental thing that quantum physics came back to, is that the mind, unlocking the understanding of the mind, is going to be the key to everything. Because this is the main interface. The mind is the interface with the world. And if the mind can expand, our consciousness expands, then we can know more. So the mind, they were interested in what is thinking. What does it mean to think? How do we know what thinking leads us to prosperity? What thinking leads us down into decline? We can make really messed up decisions. We can act against our best interests. So the real frontier was the mind, the thinking consciousness. What can this thing do? And what role is there more? Does consciousness have some part in the energy of the universe? So they were asking much deeper questions about the mind's role in energy, in life, that goes beyond just us. Like, by the time I was entering quantum physics, they knew that we weren't just a body. There was this whole energy field that was interconnected. It started to get almost mystical. And I'm going to add to you that everybody that was a quantum physicist started to go back of any real merit and have to go back to the ancient spiritual traditions. So almost every great quantum physicist realized that there was some greater mystery, and that they could, that almost was explained a little bit more through spirituality. There was hints that there was some sort of greater interconnectedness. So the state of AI, the state of physics, had to go back to, you know, are we more than physical bodies? What is this intelligent being that we have? So they were asking very deep questions. AI today is more like, how can we take everything we've known, and through traditional science, the great AI is understanding the consciousness, what it means to be awake, what it means to think, why do we propel ourselves forward, how do we store knowledge, how do we have eureka, really understanding consciousness, the mind. Modern AI today is more like, how do we store what we know from the books and our formulas in a computer so we can interact with it? Modern AI was taking science that we know, knowledge that we know, and how do you package it up in such a way that you can interact and play with it as though you had some little like living database that could also do some mathematical computation. So it's taking the known and codifying it. That is not the same as the big question is, what is the mind? What is consciousness? Where all physics got stuck. So one was understanding who we are, the role of the mind, our connection to, you know, where does knowledge come from? How do we know anything? What's the difference between instinct? What is the eureka? That's the original AI. Modern AI is sort of like bundling the known so we can poke at it and it can help us. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. So interesting.
So there, modern AI is looking at like what we could codify. And I'll give you a good example. I worked for a lot of things. So like, let's say Photoshop. If I wanted to go through a certain sort of process in Photoshop to take an image from a regular photo to do some special effects on it, there is a process. There is an algorithm. So wherever you have a known algorithm that could be put into a machine, is it thinking? No, it is it's a robot. It's a, you know, it is a non-thinking entity, but it does follow instructions. So it's like taking certain processes, not just mechanical processes like they did in the early day, like how do you, you know, pound out a hammer or something? How do you make shoes? Something that's mechanical, like, you know, a widget, but are there intellectual widgets too? So it's sort of mechanizing things that we know work. That does not make it intelligent. It means that it can take what is known and then get a more and more database, like even in a sentence, like there's this word here. If I look at all the ways this word is used, are there other words that could be in its place? So is it intelligent? No, it's going to have a huge database and some processes and it repeats it enough. It's guess and check still. It's still taking what it known. It doesn't know anything, but it says it's a high probability that if you do A, B, C, D, E, that it might come out. So it's mimicking without knowing. Doesn't know. That we don't understand what knowing is. That means understanding intelligent. That has nothing to do with that. So this has nothing to do with what really being intelligent is, or what life is, or being sentient. Those are big questions. Those are the juicy ones. Those are the ones we need to get on to. It doesn't have to do with anything living. It just has to do with it. We can store all this crap and we can store processes that we figured out really good. Like how do you shadow when you're drawing? How do you make, you know, how do you type layout? Perfect. There are ways you lay type out and formats that you can play with. That could be automated. I could study good type design and find out, you know, patterns that they play with. So then I can make the machine do it. Is it thinking? No, it's rote.
So interesting. So, Heidi, early on, you established yourself as a real pioneer, going back to Heidi Interactive and, you know, creating games and really on the front lines of social media just as it was really evolving. Talk about that phase and that early decision that you made to really focus on female and to focus on your demo. Not everybody goes down that path. I certainly think you were a pioneer there. Talk about the thinking behind it.
I am as much an inventor as I am a scientist. Scientist means I'm very interested in what is pure, true, how nature works. It's the fuel for everything. I'm interested in things that are universal. But I love making things. You know, I was an engineer. I told you I was in designing robot arms. The benefit that I wasn't just a scientist, I was an engineer, is it meant that I love understanding by like, I can build stuff. And there's a lot of I don't like to understand for understanding's sake. I'm very practical. I want to bring it down and do something with it. So when I was at, Princeton, my friends it's actually very famous men that founded like Pixar. A lot of the men were from the foundations of like, the foundations of modern, all the technology that drives modern, like all the movies today, those guys, and all the foundations of the video games, all the motion graphics guys, okay? And so basically what I could see was this. I'm like, you guys, you make this chip to do this graphical phenomena, to put it in the game, to make the game do what you like. Your games bore me. So I was thinking the more they were advancing the technology, it was more like louder and visually aggressive. And I'm like, so boring. And I'm like, oh, cool. I can see the blood. So I get higher detail of games that totally bore me. So since I could make anything, and I was an engineer too, my relationship was the shift from just studying things to realizing that What guys didn't get about science, they didn't get about making shit either. So when I looked at the video games, I'm like, your games are so boring. Now, I wasn't like, you don't let me in the game industry and you're so mean and you don't get me. I'm like, move over. Huge business opportunity. So I have always been a capitalist. I always see, oh, wait. You guys are boring, and I know I can make all these awesome, fun games. So I started to write the head of like Sega and Electronic Arts and Nintendo. I'm like, your games suck. I'm going to make you billions by making the girl game. And actually, that was the beginning of shifting to innovation and seeing what it's almost like. Not only did they not get things in science I understood, but they were making technology that I thought couldn't serve my own needs. And I liked games, so I'm going to make way better games. So this became a shift from seeing that, well, what you don't understand in science and what you don't understand about fun, because your stuff is boring to me, I understand a different sort of fun. And it began seeing that it started with video games. So I actually wrote to the companies and I'm like, I'm going to go in there and find out why your games are so boring, because I can invent whatever I want. I am not limited by any technology man has made. So I don't have to look in... I'm more interested in what's fun for me. So I'm never limited by anything man does, neither his science or his tech. So I wrote the game companies and I went around and it was really fun. And I found all these letters girls were writing and they weren't the poor me letters. There was like, what's wrong with you? Why are your career so boring? And they were writing them to the companies and they're getting them throw it out. So this starts me like, well, I can make better stuff. So the first I started was the first video games for girls. I actually worked on the first Barbie game hit. I started the beginning of making market hits. Because I was the only one who was at that level where I was fearless about what I was and what girls would like. And so I actually did the first video game for Barbie that was a CD game and it was a hit. And then the web started and I'm like, oh my God, this is so much better. Because the web, I don't want to be stuck alone in a box. And there was a lot of issues with the box in terms of memory. Like it was really good at blowing shit up, but I like creating things and I like networking. So immediately I started the very first, what we call social media today. You should go back and there's incredible press that you can't say on that. I was predicting social media. I started the first social media company where I was making interaction games and interact. So I didn't see the web as like this big dictionary like they saw it. I saw it as a way to interact and play with other people and co-create. So what we call social media, I was way ahead of the guys on that. So I started a company and was with some women artists that I brought in. And we started, that was Heidi and was the first all, so I had the first all girl game consultant for games for girls, made Barbie, made some hits. Then we started on the interactive stuff. And I started to do stuff. One of the first clients, it was all about what I called it, participatory media. I did the first interactive media. I went to CBS News and I said, why is news static? You should start the initial report and then we should open up questions and you should gather more research. Like it should be the opening of an investigation. And I did the first things for that. I did the first interactive polling, which is way better than any of the polling, how we get people involved in the elections. So I was inventing this whole new class of, let's say, activities and interactions that didn't exist before. And my friends were all the big top agency people, and they were making like corporate websites. Blah. I wasn't doing any of that boring stuff. And in fact, what I hated is they're like, this is what a web page is. And I'm like, no, you said that's a web page. Once again, guys say this is what it is. And I'm like, no, that's what you invented. And I think it could be way better. And I got really mad at the industry because it started, I thought it was wide open possibilities. And right away it starts like, and God came down and said a web page is like this. And you're like, no, that's just what you said, Mike. So I was really mad because I felt like it solidified itself before it discovered itself. It started to like narrow in and make like uniform templates for efficiency, but it was killing itself from really understanding its creative potential. So anyway, in all of that, I worked with, all sorts. I worked with music companies and the biggest brands out there. I started in entertainment and then edutainment with brands and the biggest always. And I started this whole new like type of interaction media. And everything I did was a hit, by the way. I made for Who Owned People magazine back then. I had the longest running game. So all mine was about how people come together and through interaction and play, how you create this whole new type of like play experience. And by the way, we're not doing much of that right now. So I was doing that. But through my being on the web, what I started to see was the same phenomena that I had at Princeton, which is I'm sitting there and a bunch of dudes, I love men, I have no problem with man. I'm not even angry. Man does man, but I'm not man. And I have my own, I got my own thing going here. And so what I could see is that same thing. Like, why do you say it's there? There's more on the table. There's more possibilities. In fact, I could predict when their stuff would fail. So I saw the same thing, the sort of blind spot in what could be, and a blind spot also in creating things that I could see was going to crash. They were missing something. And I could see that same thing in advertising, because the moment I did what, I was in everything now. Product development, advertising, messaging, branding. I was like, there's this thing I keep experiencing where you're all saying, this is what it is. And you're like, no, there's huge opportunities. And also some of that won't work. So it's this kind of living in how these technologies could be invented to solve like real thirsts that people had, how to make fun more fun, how to make learning, you know, more able. So I've been living in that frontier of using technology to create what didn't exist yet, but yet people would love. So I think that I've been on that girl space before it was a thing, but I started to realize there was something missing in everything now, from how guys created characters, to how guys created brands, to what their interactive was, to even what their AI was. So I have been an inventor at the frontier way before the girl stuff happened.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I love that you take that passion and turn it into action. So let's talk about the genesis of Girl Approved. It's about 18, 19 years ago. Give us the genesis there and let's sort of walk through that journey.
Today, a lot of the people that are like women in leadership are like women in tech or women in innovation. They're not necessarily scientists or engineers. So a lot of them are more managing. And what I started, I recognized there was something universally missing in everything now. It was like the what was missing in our understanding of life and nature was missing in everything. So whatever I represented was kind of, I represented something that was missing in what it meant to be a female leading, creating, thinking, a female opening up new markets, a female opening up new science. And I could just see it was like everywhere there was no counter, there was no challenger brand to the male system. Let's just call it that. Feminists were not challenging the male system. And that means everything from science to what a video game is, to what, you know, the mysteries of the universe, to how to do a better character design and what a good character is. So from character design to questions about, you know, the human mind and the foundations of, you know, of nature, to what a good ad is, what was funny. It felt like there was a blind, you know, everything was from the male mind and a male standard. And I just thought it wasn't the whole story. And I felt I saw them making a lot of mistakes. And I saw that there's a huge opportunity. And that was across that. There was no challenger brand to the man-made paradigm of science, innovation, design, you know, how that plays out, whether that's a new doll, a video game, a brand, an ad. There was no girl paradigm. And at that point, I was living uptown in by the art schools. And I would go have coffee, and all these artist girls were around me from the High School of Art and Design and LaGuardia, all the gifted girls, and they were high school girls. And remember, I had been working on video games for girls, so I just kind of, you know, used to that. And I started to talk to them, and I kind of discovered the young girls were having that same experience as me. They're sitting in classroom, no different than me at Princeton, going, I don't know, I'm not so sure about that. Or they were designing their own games on paper, their own characters. And I'm like, I love that. And I found that I connected in terms of how my mind was to the young girls who were hadn't been jaded, hadn't given up who they were. And they were like 16, 17. And their minds were still in a state of possibility. And they were still in a sense of trust in their own creativity that I had found that the older woman had lost. So I found a sisterhood in young girls who were entering into a world telling them this is the way it was, whether it was this is what to believe or not, or also what to create or not. And all these young artists wanted to create something fundamentally different. And so I started to sort of meet with them regularly. They were sort of like me saying, well, why is everybody doing this? It could be awesome if we did that. Now they weren't angry. They were like, but we could do this and it was awesome. And they were also like me, afraid of the direction the world was taking. We felt it was going in the wrong direction. And I didn't identify with the adults. I identified with the girls going, oh my God, the adults are going to fuck the world up. And also, why are they making such bad stuff? Everything could be awesome. So this sort of boldness, and they had the creative talent I connected to. And that's when I started the first all-girl think tank, because I felt that there was a chance to make the world better. And you had to be able to both have the imagination and the openness to question things. And they also had the fear of what was, because they felt the world was going in a direction that was becoming very sterile or very angry. You know, they could see, they were very detached. They were in Parsons going, this is really, something's missing. Like, you're training me to make a culture that I don't want to be part of. That's what they were like. I don't want to be, you're training me to make the video game I don't want to play. You're training me to think. So that's how I started going. They were bold, ready, and willing to explore what was next without limits. And that Girl Approved was a challenger brand to what was, in terms of how we understand the world and what we create. And Girl Approved was going to be the standard. They were like, you do you, guys. We're going to figure out, why do we feel this way and what can we create? And I started funding this with every dime I made, is this underground lab of girls exploring the world and how they would do it different.
So let's talk about some of the highlights of that journey for Girl Approved and talk about what's coming, the Girl School.
Like, we have an incredible track record of predicting hits. There's something about the unique, if you just go with the natural female mind, it can predict hits. We're really good at preventing risk. We can go into a situation and tell you, do that or not do that. There's a higher level part of the brain that turns out the females, I can get to what that is, really good at. So I didn't know about nonprofits or anything like that. I'm really stupid in business, but I'm really good at like disruptive category innovation. I'm really good at making things that make money. But business, I didn't study business at all. So I just thought, I started funding and I bought a space where all girls could start to come together and meet behind the scenes. I just had an open space. Any girl artist that wanted to come because she's worried about the state of the world or wanted to make it better, we started to gather. And I just funded this. And I literally went and I bought, like, maybe because girls didn't have laptops and they needed to be mobilized. So I went and bought all these used Apple laptops and I started to give them to these girls. I don't know why I just put my own money into it. I just had faith that that needed to happen. I didn't even know you could do grants. I didn't even know about 501c3. So we would go invent a hit, because we're really good at that, for a brand. And then we would spend about 90% of our time without rules, no masters, blank slate, figuring out why we all could see things that the parents couldn't or that the teachers couldn't. Why did we started to realize that there was things that you could make we call market hits. There was the character. We could design characters that every girl loved. Why was it? So we had no masters, no men, no rules to try to figure out what was happening in the girl brain. And why could it just know intuitively that there was something missing or that something was wrong or that it could be better? So we started to study everything. Like, why did they say yes to this advertisement? Why did they say yes to this product? What is in it that could teach us better? So below the sea, I started to meet with thousands of girls. So I bought space in New York and I started I just had an open door policy and we started to meet and we started to realize that there was an entirely different way to use our brain. And that was a whole dimension of nature that had not been explored. And if you learn to use it, it's like, it would give you information that you could allow you to literally assess if something would grow or not. Or it would allow you to debug what was wrong with something. So we start to develop a whole different way to use our brain with a whole new frontier of science. And we were realizing that all these tools of modeling human needs and prediction had these missing dimensions. So I have the only space ever where girls were free form allowed to explore what their mind could do, what knowledge it could bring in, and how that could be used to upgrade the algorithms and the data and the protocols we use to innovate, understand human capabilities, create things. That was my private lab. I can't even believe I funded it. Like, I didn't even know. So we start to discover something really profound, that girls have these capabilities. And then when you go to school, they shut it down. And if you use them, we're so much smarter. There was this girl smart thing. And then we would be able to predict something. We were able to test. We all around the world, girls started to come and discovered that we had a girl brain that nobody talked about. It was super smart. It could open up huge frontiers. It could understand human urges and desires, everything marketing should be doing. It could model nature better. So that was my lab. How I started to realize to go beyond sciences that existed. So we funded it because we were really good at what marketing should be good at, understanding unmet needs.
So you have this whole network of funded creators. You create your own lab, in effect, built around innovation, built around focus on products and services for women. Let's hear some of the hits and let's talk about the girls' school.
Well, Well, first of all, it was really funny. Behind the scenes, big companies like Pfizer and Procter and all the big ones were starting to bring us their agency work. And this was hilarious because, now remember, we only worked about 10, 12%. The rest, we were figuring out the next frontier of science, engineering, marketing, economics. That was a bulk. And we were artists too. So we were like, The first one we did actually was we worked on the first brand that actually became Taylor Swift's first brand, which was kind of cool. We invented the first, we were brought into a denim brand. Then we took it out of the ghetto and became the top junior brand. And then Walmart ended up buying it. And it was the first brand that actually Taylor Swift became part of. So it was called LEI. It was a top brand. It was failing. And they said, do a turnaround. And we actually rebranded it about the spirit of the American girl. And it went from its value system that Taylor Swift liked. It's the first brand she actually sponsored. And then it was so popular that it became the number one brand and Walmart bought it for gazillions of dollars. And then it fell apart. But the first one was Taylor's, and ended up being the one Taylor Swift was like, I can connect to the values of this brand. It's a really cute branding. I should send it to you. You'll love it today. And it captured the spirit of the free girl. It's so cute. And then, so that became a hit. It turned the brand around and it was a huge denim company. It's one of the major big denim major holding companies. It changed its name, not Victoria. What is it called? Let me remember the name of it. But it was one of the top ones that owned a lot of the denim brands, and it became their top selling brand. And it was called LEI, but the holding company was called something else. I'll remember it. It's something group, but it owns a lot of the denim brands. And so became the first thing Taylor Swift sponsored. And she put her name all over it and she identified as the character we created. And then we turned around Varsity Sports. Varsity came to us, which is cheerleading, and they were being wiped out by all the competition who was taking their territory. And Nike was trying to take over the cheerleading marketing. And I rebranded that entirely. I rebranded cheerleading from the logos to the uniforms to what they stood for, how they use social media. And they quadrupled. They got bought out by a huge, invested by a major investor, but they ended up becoming We Are Cheerleading. They were losing the market. They were really diluted. So we rebranded. So every cheerleading uniform has our logo designs on it. We've completely rebranded the entire sport, every aspect of it. And now they're invincible because they didn't own cheerleading and now they did. And we found a way they could infiltrate into every school and create all. Now they're not only do we take them beyond uniforms, they became the number one school branded t-shirts and branded just school gadget stuff. So we found a way to not only lift them up, but become the number one global store for all these sort of local branded school t-shirts and stuff. So we grew the market tremendously. And then not only did they own cheerleading, they infiltrated into every school. And then we went on to invent Universal Hit for the first hair product for Unilever came to us. And there was no one in the male hair category. And every time they did, they failed. So they said, invent it. So take the brand X. So we actually now created the male hair category. And it was so interesting because we actually ended up showing men and women read hair differently. In every case, there was I should have gone through the amazing eurekas. I didn't. There was a reason everything succeeded, but we ended up creating out of nothing the first male hair category and cracked it. It really had to show how males and women have completely different relationships to their hair. In fact, they read hair entirely different. And we ended up showing how women read men's hair. It's amazing. So just imagine there's so much more information than we're measuring today. And when you add in the girl brain, which I call girl AI, you get just a richer sort of a landscape, a map of what's happening. So we're dealing with five parameters in decision-making, and there's actually 30. And when you see all 30, it becomes easy to make a hit. It becomes easy to avoid mistakes because you understand things. So we took Axe, and now that went from Axe to Dove. Now Unilever is a gazillion dollar market. It completely owns man hair. Before there wasn't even man's hair. It was just except for dandruff. There was only man's hair in the salon, high-end stuff. So mass market, there's a bunch of stuff like this. We changed the tampon market. We created the first sports tampon. And that it went from nothing to a strong new category. So we did a lot of category innovation where we would see
a new possibility that didn't exist before. And everything we did was like really successful, like became where we were like, we're interested in one thing, market hits. How do you find a universal unmet need, grab it up and make it the iconic brand? And there's a reason things become iconic, because once you make a better brand, a better product, whatever that thing is, the thing that existed before was no longer acceptable. That's what it should be. It should be a true innovation in a market would make you look back and wonder how the hell you ever lived that way before. That's how you own a category. That's how you take out the competition, because it is so clearly better that you would never go back. It would feel like somehow, you know, the downgrade isn't, you know, impossibly, you know, to endure. That's how you change a thing, by you prove something in it to the very state that everything seemed prehistoric, either it somehow in many different ways. So that's what we were able to go into a show. We could go into a category. I could list a whole bunch of them and go, oh, there's a huge one out of P&G that hasn't happened yet that we've given them. But basically you can go in there and you can see, okay, if you, there's this need and it's unspoken because people don't quite realize it. And then if you speak it, you become like a signal, honing signal. And everybody goes like, oh my God, how did you know? I couldn't articulate it. Market research does not give you the data we need for the unconscious part of us. Market research and feedback data is simply the top level mind, but it is not getting to the underlying things that we really feel and see. And that's a huge problem right now. It doesn't give us the data, even the class of data that we need to drive the level of innovation. The way we modeled humans is baked, done. We've satisfied that. Now for humans to evolve, we have to understand ourselves at a deeper level. And to do that, we need a deeper understanding of human nature, of the mind. So anyway, we were doing this and it gave us enough money to keep our lab going. And then we had all these CEOs coming to us and they're like, I don't agree with my agency, but I can't figure out why. So what I found is that men have a really good gut instinct, super intelligent men, but they can't give words to it. So they started to hire us privately to tell them what their gut was telling them. They knew it, but they needed enough words to put together their rational arguments. So we would have like top people from very top companies hiring us quietly. We were like the hidden girl. We were like the fair. We always called ourselves the mistress. We were like the intellectual mistress. And they come to us like, can you explain this to us? And then they could go back and defend their position. So we became sort of we would debug their gut and tell them so they could present a rational argument. So we were the other girl. We always called ourselves the other girl agency. No one knew about.
I love that. So as we start to wrap, tell us about the new initiative around Girl School.
So what ended up happening was that it wasn't just that we found an entirely new system for inventing products or making hits or creating standards. We realized that we'd found a deeper understanding of what it meant to be girl, and that even our education system didn't understand the girl's capabilities. We understand, and that the girl's mind wasn't even that we learned an entirely different way to use our mind that gave us huge profound capabilities. But when the girl claimed her mind, all those mysteries of science, they were no longer mystery. That when Tesla, you should read the Tesla notes to girls on how to study nature on their own. What Tesla 9 said about the girl mind, and he said the thing you mock as intuition could be the key, a different way to use a mind, to the next frontier of human progress. And so we had actually, by taking girls, not requiring them to follow any rules or what was, we had cracked not only the next frontier of the original AI question, how does the mind work? What is consciousness? You know, we tested it. We found that the brain has another level of awareness, giving us data, a whole different type of data, and that would be used so that we could create a world where we could perpetually keep evolving, and that the algorithms and the tools of today that we were using to understand ourselves and invent our world were limited. And if we were going to expand, we needed to expand not only those tools, but how we used our own mind, that there's a higher level human functioning that we could get at. And this goes back, and we prove what Tesla and Einstein said. Girls, go study nature on your own and you can crack the mystery. And so about this time, we start to meet with great scientists from around the world. And that's when this whole like, just put a woman in an ad thing came up. And like, wait, that's not it. That's when this whole new rage of feminism came up. And they were like, you know, just put a woman at the top. I'm like, that doesn't represent her brain. So we spend just showing up and not understanding the female mind what it brings to the table, and how it will advance the tools the entire industry is using. You're missing it. You're just a girl in what is. You're not a girl owning who she owes to help man go what he cannot do alone. And so all this sudden thing for about inclusion and all that, feminism, DEI never studied what the girl was. It never did the work that we did. It has nothing to do with what a girl is according to her own nature. What a girl is and what her mind can do is the one mystery in nature no man has the technology to study. It's his mind. Only a girl can tell you what's in her mind. Only a girl can explore and open up the potentials. And somehow, feminism never did that work, and neither did DEI. So the idea that girls could advance how the world is true, but not a girl denying who she is, not a girl included in what is, because included in what is clipping off her wings. She has skills, and she can own them, and she can help man as man helps us. So ironically, we did the work, and we won the Future of AI contest, by the way, at MIT, and we were meeting with Stanford. But then all of this, like even the trans argument is questionable. There are people with body conflicts. Absolutely. I've met many of them. But what is the solution? And we found that we didn't even know what a girl was. So how can a guy know to be the girl? I believe that people are uncomfortable. Some are uncomfortable with their body, but a lot of are uncomfortable with the definition of life. So we ended up meeting a lot of the trans community because we have more life in us. Our minds can know more. We can create more. We can predict more. We can stop more harm. All our work came back to the next frontier of the human mind is we're more than what we're living. We started to live small like our science. Nature is bigger than science. Science models only 4% of what could be. So we realized that everybody, even the women trying to help women, hadn't figured out what a woman was. And so they're forcing her to lose her skills. But if she owned them, she could literally help man do what he can't do alone. So that's when we decided that we have to start girl school. And we met men all around the world. They can't tell you what's in the girl brain. Only she can, just as a man has helped us. So we decided that we're going to launch girl school because at the end of the day, if the girl owns her mind, which we did, we would be able to upgrade everything. Humans are so much bigger than we know today. And man has taught us to use our mind in great ways that have given us all mathematics and engineering. However, there's more to the human mind. Ask Elon, ask every great scientist. Consciousness is the frontier. Understanding what it means to be alive and thinking. Well, who's really natural at that? Girls. And I'll tell you something else. There used to be two sciences, the queen science and the king science. People don't know that. They canceled the queen science. It must come back. And we can get in. So we are starting an institute because one, there's no place a girl can go and study who she is, or she has to only agree to science as it is. There's no way she could challenge that, correct that. One, that every girl deserves a space where she doesn't have to just say yes, where she can ask why, or maybe I can do better. That does not exist anywhere. There's no school that will teach you what a girl can do and what she brings to the table. There's no school out there where she can optimize her brain. They know it and they get shut down. So one, that should exist. Second, there's nobody that can tell you what can a girl brain do? How can it advance marketing? How can it advance economics? And what we end up showing is everywhere, all over in Africa. I have girls all over Africa, Brazil, all Asia, Thailand. Girls everywhere are born with this incredible natural technology that hasn't been harvested yet. And if she harvests it, she can help the world innovate what is next. We can solve many of these crises. So that's why I started to see these girls are the great untapped resource. And the average human mind is untapped. But these girls are born naturally gifted in a way we need them. So when you say they're marginalized, that's bullshit. She's no marginalized if you look at her through a lens of not knowing. But if you actually understand what she is, every girl is born with technology, a mind, with natural capabilities the world needs. And so even when they're trying to feel sorry for these girls, no, these girls, don't feel sorry for them. You need them because they are not conditioned. They are conditioned to be brilliant. They're conditioned to fly and take us places. We need that natural resource. It is like a bee pollinating. They're like bees, pollinators. We need their honey, you know, to make honey. And so this whole narrative that we tell Black girls and African, poor you, it's the wrong narrative. And it starts to oppress them. And so the very people that think they're liberating girls are literally oppressing them to fit into a system that science has been done with for 50 years. More than 50 years. Been there, done that. And what we could be doing is stop focusing what is. Stop talking about who cares about slavery. These girls could invent a beautiful world. Focus on that. We're stuck. We don't need to fight man. We got skills he needs. We actually can create demand on our skills. He'll be coming to us, just like the CEO started to call a group and say, can you explain this? I know what's wrong. All right. Men are eager. Men like to fix things. Men like to learn things. And if there's ways that we can advance technology, we can advance our understanding of nature, that we can have better metrics, he's in. All right. When you show up and you join the problem solving team, you help a man get smarter, he's game. I have never not, you know, it's people like you that are most open. Everyone, girl, I cannot tell you. NYU, Harvard, they all like, change new name, girl. I'm like, no, I'm not doing that because I was born a girl. I need to understand what it meant. I arrived, when it was my possibility. And they say, no man will respect her. You know who calls us the most? Men like you. Nobel laureate, I cannot tell you how many Nobel laureate scientists, men at the frontier that speak to us. I think the narrative about what a girl is, how girls relate to men entirely has to change. We have gifts, men are eager to learn them, and together we can do what one cannot do. And that's why we need girl school to teach the world what a girl truly is so that men and women can work together at a higher level. We can help men use parts of his brain and wake that up. He'll be thankful. And everybody will gain. And we don't have to fight over what was. We get to create what could be. And that frontier is so much more better. That's my story.
What a story it is, Heidi. I can't thank you enough for joining us here. I think I followed most of what you said. You really go deep and fast and hard. Your passion is tremendous and admirable, and wishing you every success with what you're doing. I know that you're talking to members of our team about us doing some stuff together in the future. And thank you so much for joining us here on Great Minds.
I want us to feel, look at all the children being born, as no one's a victim because they're born with gifts that the world hasn't benefited yet. So we can invent a better world. And that's our message, girls. No one's born broke. No one's born broke. They're broke with gifts the world needs.
Let's go create the world. I love it. All right, Heidi, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.